I couldn't stop if I wanted to. A 9-to-5 is something that I don't wanna do. Sit in the cubicle miserable as I slave away. Getting complacent with life as my dreams fade away. Nah, motivation to go harder. I'd rather spit that real.
Good morning, good evening, good night, folks. This is your Five Tool Sports Podcast host, Woody Massey, and I'm here with all the tools today. We got Substitute, Fresh on Break, Recess is out, CSPM McLaughlin.
What's good?
Chucking dodgeballs with the kids.
You know, throwing some beaners.
Headhunting. If you headbutting the kids, you out of there.
Ultimate Dodgeball was like, outside of obviously basketball, football,
it was the best.
One of the greatest physical education games of all time.
Because it's only the strongest survive. And now, it was so funny. I joined an adult, my buddies in like an adult dodgeball league, and I showed up to the open gym to play with them. Right? I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I love dodgeball. First 5 minutes, this little dude, this little skinny guy who can barely throw, runs up to the line, and he throws like, and I'm just over there on the side, just full gym class, like, woo, and just like slow-mo, oh, wow. Ball hits him in the face, like Fight Night knockout, and then everyone's like, whoa, buddy, no headshots. So
like, you like played this 12 years ago, what?
The game's changed since I last suited up.
Just like the NFL.
That guy, well, he almost cried. It was so funny. Coach Brandon Lumberg.
Yo. What's
Brandon
up, man?
Like he was picked on in dodgeball.
Nah, man. I was good at dodgeball. I caught everything thrown out. I was like the Billy Madison, you know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we got a busy, busy show today. We're going to be going over all the games from this weekend. Not that many, though, because it was Bimageddon. And maybe drop some fantasy nuggets along the way. Help y'all out with next week's bye week. So we got more byes coming this week. We ain't out the clear yet. But before we do that, let's jump over to CJ for some trivia.
Hey. Clip full, fellas. No, I'm lying. But I got one in the chamber, though.
Nice.
Who has the most receiving yards since 2018? What NFL player has the most receiving yards since 2018? I'm going to go to you first, Brandon, and, you know, per usual, we'll have Woody bringing up the rear.
Davante Adams.
Okay, that's a really, really good guess.
I'm going Stephon Diggs.
Okay, so I got Davante Adams from Brandon and Stephon Diggs from Woody. And I'll read the question one more time for the listeners out there.
I know Michael Thomas probably.
Who has the most receiving yards since
2018?
Unfortunately, both of you all were wrong.
Damn it.
The Stephon Diggs guess was not a great guess. It wasn't a terrible guess. I mean, he's top six since.
I was gonna say he's had like 1,000 yards each of those years.
I know Michael Thomas had a killer year in between, or maybe two.
So, number one, this puzzles me. I thought Davante Adams was a really good guess. I actually thought it was Davante Adams at first.
He got injured like two of those years for a few games.
So, most receiving yards since 2018, you got DeAndre Hopkins at number one.
Oh, Nuck, duh.
He played 54 games, so he played in as many games as possible. He accumulated 4,564 reception yards on 367 targets with an average of 84.5 yards per game with 31 reception touchdowns. Number two was Travis Kelce. He also played 54 games. 4,514 yards, so he's just 50 yards behind DeAndre Hopkins, which is crazy for a tight end these days. He has 350 receptions, 496 targets. He's averaging just a hair over 83 reception yards a game with 30 touchdowns. So, yeah, it's and then you have Davante Adams at number three. And Davante Adams probably would be number one, but he did have a season a couple years ago where he missed, I want to say, 4 or 5 games for turf toe. And so the best ability is availability. And just because Devontae Adams hasn't been quite as available as DeAndre Hopkins and Travis Kelce, he's at number three.
All right, guys, nice. We got a couple of news things to go over first since we have less games. Let's talk about them real quick. Obviously, this week, this is huge, especially for the Thursday night game. And this is huge for playoff seeding as well, because one of the best matchups we're going to have this season, especially on Thursday night, be the Packers and the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals coming in undefeated. Packers with the one opening loss to the New Orleans Saints and have been on fire since, winning all six of their matchups. But Packers will be without their star wide receiver, Devontae Adams, who's been put on the COVID reserve list.
Yeah, terrible. That hurts.
Yeah, that's rough. So do the Packers, they going to have a chance against the Cardinals without the star wide receiver?
Oof. No.
Probably
no
not.
Chance. No.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I mean, look, with Devontae Adams there, I feel as though it was definitely going to be a shootout. Devontae Adams opens up so much in that offense for Aaron Rodgers. And now that Devontae Adams isn't going to be there, Aaron Rodgers is going to have to lean on the likes of Randall Cobb and Robert Tonyan. And it's not that those guys are bad receivers. It's just now they have to do more, right? And, I mean, it's a huge loss.
We have another person added to the COVID list this week, but this might actually be a little bit of an improvement. Matt Nagy says he's tested positive for COVID-19.
It might be the best thing that's happened to Chicago this year.
Yeah.
We actually have some trade action early before the deadline already. The New York Jets are bringing back quarterback Joe Flacco from the Eagles, who obviously the Eagles had acquired Gardner Minshew, so there's no reason to have Flacco on the roster still. Call me crazy, but I think the Jets adding Flacco, this might be a sneaky week to slip them into some teasers, because I think this makes them twice as competitive.
Twice as competitive is a bold statement. Does it move the needle a little bit? I think it does a teeny bit.
He looked decent last year.
Yeah, and he looked decent in preseason too, which we know how that goes, because Zach Wilson looked great in preseason. So
yeah, yeah. So Justin Fields.
What's the details of that trade? Where was Joe Flacco? Because I thought he was on the Jets.
No, I just said he was on the Eagles. Remember?
On the Eagles. Okay. Yeah. So who did he play with during the preseason this past
Eagles.
Year? The Jets.
Eagles.
The Eagles.
Oh, Eagles. Yeah.
It cost the Jets a 2022 sixth round draft pick.
I think I got my has-beens mixed up.
Yeah, there was some debate in the preseason that he could potentially take over that starting spot. And that was before the Minshew trade, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, huge news. The Carolina Panthers, after last week, which we'll dive into this one. I'm probably going to eat some humble pie here, are jumping into the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes.
Yeah.
So I look at, if the Panthers pick up Deshaun Watson and Christian McCaffrey comes back in a week, they back in contention?
Yeah, the Super Bowl contenders.
Jeez.
I mean,
I don't give Watson with that wide receiver.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Let's be honest.
I did hear some debate, and I can't remember where I heard it, that even if he is traded, wherever he goes, he's going to get shut down to play this year, more than likely, by the NFL. He hasn't been charged with anything, right? So, like, there's only allegations still out there.
But the precedent has kind of been set, right? Like, Ezekiel Elliott wasn't charged. I have another name on the tip of my tongue who had issues off the field in the last couple of years, domestic issues, and they weren't charged, and they were suspended, I want to say, 6 games as well. So, I mean, just based off that alone.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Unfortunately, in the NFL, as we've seen with like Kareem Hunt comes to example, like unless there's video, like that's you can see what happened. It's usually innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, I think he does help him. You know, obviously get into playoff contention if he were to come in there in the next week or two and he's able to grasp the playbook quickly and he makes a difference right out of the gate. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is a year that he does need to kind of take a step back, let things clear a little bit and then make his move. I think that there's bigger issues going on in Carolina. Matt Rhule, you know, I heard some stuff or read some stuff that there's some infighting between him maybe and Joe Brady going back and forth about the offense and kind of how it's not progressing the way that Matt Rhule would like it to. But at the same time, Matt Rhule has been a little bit somewhat outspoken in the media. I don't have the statements right in front of me. Anytime you have any kind of infighting like that, that does have an effect on the team. So we'll see how that pans out and where that goes. But a lot of blame needs to be, you know, most of the blame has to be on the head coach, obviously. Some of it has to be on the quarterback and obviously the guy who's calling plays. So they got to figure it out.
And look, what it comes down to is none of those issues would be issues if Deshaun Watson was there. And I get your reaction, Brandon, saying, okay, Deshaun Watson on that team makes them a contender. That's kind of like super just brash to say. But, I mean, we know Deshaun Watson is that type of talent, and we know that the quarterback position is that important to the team. I don't think any of us would argue that they don't have weapons on the outside. Now, do they have, you know, premium weapons on the outside? Maybe not. But they
DJ Moore is a premium weapon.
DJ Moore is not a premium weapon yet.
Mm.
He's on his way. But what I'm saying is even if you do think DJ Moore is a premium weapon, that unit together isn't premium on the outside. You got Robbie Anderson. You got DJ Moore. It's solid. It has a lot of upside. You got Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. You got a bad offensive line. Deshaun Watson is nothing he hasn't seen before. And then you got a defense that's getting better. Sounds like Super Bowl contenders to me. Obviously not this year. He won't see a down. But, I mean, hell, at this point, he's lucky he's still seeing the sun and the moon and the stars.
I honestly think we're underestimating how much adding Christian Deshaun Watson, having Christian McCaffrey will affect the game, whether that be the run option or just having him out of the backfield as a wide receiver. Yep. I think it'd be absolutely insane. And
spot on,
unstoppable combination.
It's like taking Kamara out of the Saints offense, what it would look like. You know what I mean? And that's based, their scheme is based around CMC, similarly to Kamara.
He's a $100 million man. Like you just subtracted $100 million worth of value from that roster.
And Joe Brady's, his mindset is from the Saints. His whole scheme is from the Saints. And guess what? He centered it around CMC. CMC's not there. They don't have a guy who can step into that role and play like CMC. So therefore, the offense suffers at this time.
Even though Chuba Hubbard has looked actually very good for a rookie. Killing it. All right, guys, let's dive right into the games. First game, Thursday Night Football. Denver Broncos, Cleveland Browns, Case Keenum stepping in for an injured Baker Mayfield in this one, and just doing what exactly we said he might do for the Browns and not make mistakes. Cleveland won this one 17-14 by a field goal. We saw D'Ernest Johnson, who had a big game last year when he filled in for the two Pro Bowl backs, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And we saw it again this year, 22 carries, 146 yards, and a touchdown. Boy, he looked good Thursday night. Can D'Ernest and Nick Chubb looking to come back this week? So, I mean, honestly here, guys, if they got D'Ernest Johnson and Nick Chubb, 1-2 punch, the Browns offense isn't going to sputter here. I think that'll get them past at least a few games.
Yeah. They did a great job, honestly, the Browns defensively in this game. They were able to get after Teddy Bridgewater and sack him 3 times. They got him under pressure 13 total times in this game. So, I mean, when you look at that aspect of things, that's a big deal. But going back to what you just said, the run game for the Browns, Nick Chubb, D'Ernest Johnson, the way he stepped up in this game, the Browns had 182 rush yards, and they were just gashing Denver's run defense numerous times for chunk gains. So, but a lot of credit needs to go out to the Browns offensive line. We've already discussed it. Best offensive line in the NFL. Even when they're banged up, they're still able to play well. And this was a testament to that. So
does anyone know the severity of Von Miller's injury that he suffered Thursday? Because that looked bad. And I mean, obviously he's on the wrong side of 30. One of the great pass rushers we've ever seen in the NFL.
I mean, I'm looking that up now, but go ahead and talk about the game.
Like, that's what impressed me the most was D'Ernest Johnson just stepping in, filling in. And look, you're still playing against NFL caliber defenders. So I know some people can make the case, well, you know, Cleveland, they have one of the best run offenses in the league. And yes, that matters. But D'Ernest Johnson was running hard. And to see a guy like that to come from South Florida, where he actually backed up Marlon Mack, didn't have a shot at the pros, played in the Alliance Football League, and he was Instagram DMing, you know, officials, front office officials for teams to get tryouts. And now here he is. So it's a great story.
Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes.
Von Miller is listed as questionable as of now, but it says he could miss time after exiting Thursday's loss to Browns early. So I think we're going to have to wait for the official injury report today.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing that I want to mention about that game, I did choose the Broncos just because the Broncos had the starting quarterback, right? I also mentioned that, hey, it wouldn't be a huge fall off between Baker to Case Keenum, and it wasn't. And I think the telltale sign will be when we'll see a fall off if the Cleveland Browns are ever unable to run the ball. If they can't run the ball with Case Keenum back there and Case Keenum has to drop back pass, then we're going to see a fall off, even from Baker. And that's not his cup of tea either, you know? So, I mean.
Yeah.
So,
I think Jarvis, Baker.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. I think Baker, you know, he's not even ruled out for this week coming up, they're saying, too. Keep an eye on that for sure. So I think Keenum did a good job, though, obviously. He did. But
Jarvis Landry came back and, as we thought, moved into the with Case Keenum, like that slot role, little short passes. He led the team receptions, 5 receptions, 37 yards. But the big story here for me that I want to touch on is this is the first time I've been able to watch a Browns game all the way through this year. I've been seeing them on Sunday on NFL Red Zone, watching big chunks of the game, but haven't been able to watch them on a drive-by-drive basis. And the thing I think we need to touch on here is OBJ. I know he's coming back from a major injury, but we're about 4 weeks now or 3 weeks back in from coming back, and it's not like he's not getting open. He's dropping wide-open passes. Is OBJ?
He is getting open.
He's been done. That's the question you about to ask, right? Is he done? He's been done, unfortunately. And I always use OBJ as the greatest example of why great players are great, because you can't just do it for 3 years. The guys that we mentioned, you know, as the greatest, they do it for a decade, for 12 years, for 15. They at least give us 7. You know, and as talented as OBJ is and was, when he came into the league, he took the league by storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Within 6 weeks in the NFL, OBJ was regarded as probably one of the most talented receivers the NFL had ever seen. But you know what? Talent and greatness, they're not necessarily, you know, they're not synonymous.
Call me crazy, though. I still think if OBJ went to a team with an elite quarterback, he would still be effective, because if you watch the way the Browns use him, there's a lot of throws across the middle. And OBJ has never been that middle of the field warrior who's going to take on hits. He's always been a king of the sideline. Like, he's got amazing foot control, amazing hands near the sideline. And Baker just doesn't have that arm to put it where OBJ is successful.
OBJ, your boy. I totally understand.
You don't think if OBJ, like, exited and signed with someone like who's someone's wide receiver needy a little bit, like, hey, imagine if OBJ went to the Packers.
I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers makes everybody better. Okay, that's quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers make everybody better. But
that would be,
you started this by saying OBJ is dropping wide open passes. Now, in my mind, it's nothing different than, you know, what I've seen the last 2 or 3 years. I've seen him drop a lot of passes that his rookie year he would have had. Probably would have caught it one-handed. But, I mean, I think OBJ has something left in the tank. But I think we got to stop calling him OBJ, because if he's giving us 60 catches for 800 yards, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, he Odell Beckham Jr. He not OBJ, you know.
It's true.
A quick call out on this game, though, real quick. You know, we did some player props on last week's preview show. I just wanted to throw out there the Melly G scoring a touchdown at, I believe it was plus 300 odds on one app, but someone had put $20,000 on plus 200 odds, and he scored that one touchdown. So they bet 20K, they won 40K.
Jelly. Ooh. Carolina Panthers and New York Giants. The Giants were coming into this one getting 2.5 points, and they put a beat down on the Carolina Panthers. So bad that Sam Darnold was benched in the beginning of the fourth quarter, I believe, or a little bit into the fourth quarter. And he looked bad. He looked bad. He'll be starting again this week. They've already released that, but it was not looking good. And that game, I thought the Giants, it was going to be a get-right game for the Carolina Panthers. And the Giants defense, that pass rush that they had last year, finally showed up. So I think this says a couple things for this season. One, I don't think this is the Carolina Panthers' death sentence. I don't think they're going to continue playing this bad. But they're really missing CMC from this offense. And I think we're seeing that, especially with Sam Darnold having it just the defense has to respect him coming out of the backfield so much that it gives him a little bit more time. And that line is atrocious. But Sammy D wasn't even making throws downfield. He was seeing ghosts. Hearing ghosts.
I mean, it's the Sammy D I've come to know, love, and respect.
Yeah, there's so much here. In terms of the game though, Giants they played great defense, did a good job getting off the field on third down. 2 of 15 actually is what the Panthers were on third down. So they got the Panthers into a lot of third and longs and forced them, you know, into, you know, obvious third and passing situations. So and
this game was ugly too. The score was 5-3, a good way into the second quarter.
Yeah, right. That was another aspect.
I thought
of
it was
it
a
too.
World Series. I thought it was one of the postseason baseball scores or something when it flashed at the bottom of my TV. I'm
right. Like who's the Panthers? The Giants held the Panthers to 2.8 yards per play, and they also held them to 173 total yards. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, the Giants didn't even have their full onslaught of offensive weapons for this game. And again, like you said, it was 5-3 for a long time. So, it's not like the Giants were just like a juggernaut on offense themselves. It took them a while. Panthers defense weren't awful. They didn't play a terrible game. They still held the Giants to 300 yards. But the Giants, they did a good job. The big difference, they kept Daniel Jones clean. He made, you know, the necessary throws that Darnold couldn't. They converted third downs in comparison to what the Panthers could not do. So that's really the difference, to be honest with you.
Danny Jones, as always, teasing us again, making probably the most impressive catch I've ever seen by a quarterback on a trick play. In a long time, the one-handed grab and taking a hit right afterwards. Maybe we should move him to a receiver if we end up finding a quarterback.
You got your quarterback.
I got a question for both of you all before we move on. Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones?
Daniel Jones.
Right. As of right now, it's Daniel Jones.
As of right now, but last week it would have been Sammy D.
No. I'm just holding out, still holding out. Sammy D can throw the ball better than Daniel Jones.
I mean, maybe he's got mono again. Who knows?
I'm just trying to reset you because, you know, you're going in on your boy Danny Dimes. You have been this
entire
season.
He ain't the one.
And then, but then you see, and I'm just saying, if Sam Darnold was the quarterback of the New York Giants, that's what it would take for you to realize that Sammy D is not the guy for anyone.
I'm starting to get there. He looked really bad last week.
Well, you know, you had to warm up to the idea of Jared Goff not being the guy too. So, I cut you some slack.
Yeah. Fair enough. Dante Pettis made a reemergence here. Haven't heard from him since he left the San Francisco 49ers. He had 5 catches, 39 yards, and a touchdown. Also threw a pass, completed Daniel Jones. If Giants can get some good work from Dante Pettis, if you get Kenny Golladay back this week, get Sterling Shepard back this week, and Darius Toney.
The biggest one to me is Saquon close to coming back this week?
I've heard that he might miss this week as well.
Thank God I go against him in fantasy. Yeah.
But Devontae Booker last week, 14 carries, 51 yards, touchdown. He's getting the job done. Yeah, he's getting the job done. And a lot of people thought he'd be a nice fill-in picking him up from Las Vegas.
No, it was a solid season. It was a solid pickup.
So the Giants now are 2-5. Who knows? Maybe they'll make a useless run here. I don't think there's much more to say in this game, except this week might be a win. In the next 2 weeks, the Panthers got to get at least a win the next 2 weeks. And then they get CMC back, and we can reevaluate. Let's go New York Jets and New England Patriots. We all slammed the Patriots on this one. It was a rematch, Zach Wilson against Bill Belichick's defense. And it went exactly how we thought it was going to go, except even more so. The Patriots putting up 54 in this one, and they didn't even get defensive touchdowns here. The offense was just rolling.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyway, if there was a bet that this Pats offense was going to go over 50 this year, then someone would have made
I mean, look, everything with the Pats, it starts with the run game, all right? They ran the ball really well Sunday versus the Jets, which we expected them to be able to do. But I think that's what it really comes down to. Neither one of these teams are playoff teams. I don't think the Patriots get in. They have a chance, but I don't think they'll get in. And the Jets, they'll probably be picking number one again next year.
Yeah, Mac Jones went over 300 yards here. 307, two touchdowns, 24-36. Probably his best game so far.
Super efficient. Yeah. Not doing anything stupid with the football. The Patriots also had 32 first downs to 18. I mean, I'm surprised the Jets had 18 with the score the way it is, but they just did not. They converted the same amount of third downs as well. But again, it comes down to the run game, the combination of the pass game, just kind of everything flowing the way the Patriots like to do it. So
now with the addition of Joe Flacco to this roster now after that trade, one player to look out that's probably available in a lot of fantasy league waiver wires, and we saw this week he took over that Jets backfield, is rookie Michael Carter. We've been waiting for him to actually get the work, show that he's something, and he's someone who's on the waiver wire during Bye-mageddon. If you could pick him up, I believe the Jets are on bye this week. He had 8 receptions, 67 yards. Then he also had 11 carries, 37 yards.
Yeah,
Michael Carter, great, probably running back one, low running back two on the waiver wire available.
I mean, hey, if that Jets offense can get some weapons around him, he'll be a little fantasy nugget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, once that offense can start moving the ball and scoring points, Michael Carter will be a fantasy nugget.
Yeah, now, 2023 probably will be the year.
We saw Brandon Bolden have 6 receptions for 79 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
Now, we've been waiting to see who kind of emerges as the Patriots pass catcher out of the backfield, because he is James White, obviously done for the season. So Brandon Bolden here, do we see him? I think this may have established him as that third down guy. And with a quarterback like Mac Jones, who has, let's be honest, like a suspect arm, that running back out of the backfield is big. Then there might be some value there. He could continue that.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate about Belichick's running backs, because Brandon Bolden, like, he's had the weirdest career with New England. Like, he's a special teams guy, and then sometimes he'll start at running back, and I've seen him be used as a cover lineback, so I just don't really know what to expect. I think it's, obviously, you know, Bill, he loves his players to be versatile, so I think that's what Bolden is. And, you know, as you mentioned, with James White out, you got J.J. Taylor back there, who's a smaller guy. You could say he's a pass-catching back, but he's still super raw.
He was their goal line back this week. Two touchdowns on the goal line.
Oh, yeah? Interesting. It's a little man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not going to spend too much time on that game. Let's go to the Kansas City Chiefs, the Tennessee Titans. Probably the most surprising game of Sunday.
Yeah.
We all thought, I thought it was a get-right game for Kansas City last week against Washington. They looked good, and the Titans' defense hasn't been great. But Tennessee didn't even need Derrick Henry in this one. Like, he didn't have a bad game, but it was about Ryan Tannehill and the quarterback, and they were just getting interceptions.
So we can look at the box score, we can look at the stats, and we can say, you know what, Derrick Henry didn't have a great game.
29 carries, 86 yards, but he threw a touchdown pass.
Derrick Henry is the reason the Tennessee Titans won that game. Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown, all of those guys wouldn't have been able to do what they did if Derrick Henry wasn't getting that tough yardage and if he hadn't already ran for damn near 800 yards through the season coming into the game. So, I mean, look, that should be the Tennessee Titans' MO every week, whether they're successful at running him or not. Derrick Henry should have 25 to 30 carries, all right? And everything else should work off of that. And we all sit here last week. We all said, hey, this is the formula that Tennessee needs to beat Kansas City. We all knew it. We didn't necessarily think they were going to do it, but we knew they could. And boy, they did.
So Derrick Henry threw for a touchdown pass in this one. Didn't have a rushing touchdown. Still has 10 rushing touchdowns so far.
Yeah, this was the A.J. Brown game.
A.J. Brown, welcome back to the limelight.
Welcome back.
133 yards and a touchdown. See, just gave him up an Davante Adams trade. It's a bummer, bro. If he keeps it going like that.
COVID and A.J. Brown is doing his thing.
Yeah. Hey, just to touch on that real quick, what you guys were talking about with Henry, I do believe, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You'd never give up on that, regardless of how much a team is trying to stop it. And it's just going to set everything else up. And that is the formula for the Titans the rest of the way. This team is legit now. I mean, they're honestly a contender. Like, they look like a contender out of nowhere. Here they are.
That's a little bold.
I see your point, Brandon. You turn around, you beat Buffalo, and then you turn around and you beat Kansas City. I think we may be overvaluing this Kansas City win because, the last 4 or 5 weeks, I was like, I'm not worried. This Kansas City offense scored 3 points.
Now we're gonna,
I am worried.
We're going to move over to the Kansas City in just a second, but one thing that I think is on a lot of fantasy people's mind, and I'm facing this problem in a team I'm second place in the league, I have Julio Jones as my second starting wide receiver. He's only had one good game this year. After a decent game against Buffalo, I thought maybe he was reemerging into the offense. He had 2 catches this week. Obviously, if A.J. Brown reemerges, is Julio Jones even a wide receiver too? Still,
he's going to show up soon, I think, within the next week or two, because what will happen is teams will now focus their attention more on A.J. Brown, and then it'll go vice versa and back and forth. I mean, you got to rob Peter to pay Paul at some point.
But the thing that we questioned when they acquired him this offseason was, is there enough targets to go around in this play action offense? So that's the thing that I think
a lot of
people wonder.
It's enough targets to go around if there's enough wins to go around. Winning is a cure-all, but honestly, logically speaking, in hindsight, I mean, let's think about it. This offense needs Derrick Henry to touch the ball and to run the rock. That's what they do. And for us to even, think or even imagine, and I'm guilty of it, that Tennessee was going to come into the season and open it up a little more, well, we were dumb for that. And Tennessee was dumb for that because I think that's what they were trying to do early in the season. Now you see them these past few weeks, and they've really gotten back to what they do well. So,
yeah, get play action. Tannehill has thrived in this offense since he arrived in Tennessee based off of play action. So when they get that going and it's obvious that every defense is concerned about Derrick Henry, that's how this thing will open up. I mean, there's targets to go around. There's enough. It'll be big plays more than it'll be yards after catch.
I have some questions for you here. Jalen Waddle or Julio Jones for the rest of the season? Fantasy.
Jalen Waddle.
All right.
Yeah, right now.
Michael Pittman Jr. Julio Jones. Rest
Michael
of the season,
Pittman Jr.
Here's a good one. Tyler Lockett, Julio Jones.
That's just hit or miss. It's the same situation as what you're seeing. If you're going back and forth, Metcalf 1 week, Lockett could pop up.
I'd rather Keenan go Allen. To the casino and play slots than
Keenan Allen, Julio Jones, rest of the fantasy season.
Keenan Allen.
All right, so based off these rankings, based off what you're saying, Julio Jones is outside of the number 2, because I'm looking at fringe scores here in the wide receiver 2.
Yeah. Well, Julio's probably not even a WR2 in most leagues this year. Probably
He's not. That's what I'm saying. Is Julio Jones even a star? He's a flex option now.
Yeah. I mean, look, what kept Julio alive in the past is, one, the Falcons being behind by a lot, right?
Yes, and yes.
Exactly. Being forced to throw the ball. But then Julio would always give us, like insane, like 10 catches, 175 yards, 12 catches, 207 yards. He's something crazy. And he still might have that in him. But I mean, I don't think Julio's a bad player. I don't even want to say he's too far past his prime. I just think it's a lot of variables that go into this situation.
All right, let's look at the Kansas City Chiefs real quick. Patrick Mahomes in this one, 20 of 35, 206 yards, an interception, actually left this game after getting what looked like Boston crabbed by a ghost with his body. It was insane. He got tripped up with his knees. His head ended up going into a defender's knee, and his body bent back the opposite way. And it was...
He passed concussion protocol, so...
He's supposed to play this week, which... So that he's not going to miss any time. I mean, we just said it. We're worried about the Chiefs here, but are we worried about Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
The line, I think it's insane how much money you can drop into an offensive line and look this bad.
It's really on him in a lot of ways. Thank you.
Yeah.
His decision making, we all know what he is as a player. He believes in his ability to make plays with his legs, his arm, all the stuff that you see and all the hype around that. And sometimes it's better to be Tom Brady. It's better to be Mac Jones, right? It's better to be a guy just making throws, getting it to the athletes from the pocket quickly and decisively rather than, okay, there's that 5-yard play, there's an underneath, or there's like, you know, my back is in the flat. Take what is there initially. Don't think, okay, I'm coming off what's there. I'm going to try to make a play deeper down the field, so to speak, where he's running around trying to do that, because defenses are taking that away. They know that his tendency is to do that. So now he has to find it within himself to hone that in and dink and dunk every once in a while to get down the field.
Yeah, Brandon said exactly what I was going to say. Like, it's more so Patrick Mahomes, and not necessarily saying he's playing bad. He just has to change his style up. And I feel like the more comfortable he's gotten in this league, I think the more, no pun intended, out of pocket he's began to kind of play and just do a lot of these crazy plays. But guess what, son? It's still the NFL. It's still football. And you still have to, the X's and O's do matter. The 3-yard check down does matter. You know, it's not about the touchdown. Let's get the first down. You know, it's...
Yeah.
And let's be honest here. Let's look at, like, the drafting of Kansas City. They've spent some premium draft picks on this offense after the offense was already established. And people wondered, like, why aren't you selecting a defensive player there at the end of the first round to get that cheap contract, put people on the defense that can, like, improve you? You've drafted Mecole Hardman, who's... At this point now, he's underperforming. He shows flashes, but he's just so small. The consistency isn't there.
He's a return guy. That's it.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Gadget.
I mean, that was another gadget guy. A lot of people love that pick coming out because of the loose comparisons to Brian Westbrook in Andy Reid's offense. Imagine if they had taken a defensive back and a pass rusher contract.
Can I stop you, Woody?
Please.
So I don't know if you guys knew. Do you guys know who selected Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the draft?
Mahomes.
Exactly. They said, Patrick, who do you want? Who do you like? I don't know. This is what we're looking at. And he's like, yo, give me that guy right there. Give me the 4.6 speed guy who has great hands but can't really run away from anybody. And he's not great between the tackles. That's why players play, coaches coach.
Yeah. GM
scout department scouts.
Let's be real. Like, this offense probably would be in a better position if they just would have kept Damian Williams on a cheap contract.
Oh yeah. I could see that for sure.
For sure. Go out there, get a corner. They went out, they got Juwan Thornhill.
Then they get what's his name again? Sneed.
Legarius Sneed.
Yeah.
Who they got him, I think, later in the draft, but he's been one of the better young corners. Obviously, he's been inconsistent, which is what you see, but they went out, they signed Frank Clark to replace who's old boy that jumped offsides a couple years ago?
Mike Dana?
No, edge rusher. He played for Kansas City. He jumped off sides versus Houston. The Patriots. Was it Justin Houston?
I think so.
I think it was Justin Houston. Okay, and then they go out. They replace him with Frank Clark. So they've tried. They've just tried and failed, which means maybe the front office needs to go.
All right, so check this out, though. Before we move on, CJ, you said you're worried about the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to make a claim here. I'm late to the party, but I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs if their line keeps playing like this. And the reason behind that is, let's look at their schedule. So they play the Giants next week. Possibility of a get-right game. But if the pass rush continues from last week, what they did to the Carolina Panthers line, Patrick Mahomes is going to have another rough week. Then they're playing the Green Bay Packers. I'm going with the Packers as of right now. Then they go to the Las Vegas Raiders. Then they play the Cowboys, Broncos, Raiders again. They're going to split one of those games with the Raiders. The Raiders are at least going to take one of those. Raiders always show up to play when they play against Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
And then they go against the Chargers, Steelers, Bengals, and Broncos to close it out. That is a tough.
It was already a tough schedule. When you win your division, you get a tougher schedule. When you win your division the previous year. So coming into the season, we would have looked at it and said, that's a tough schedule. But now where they are now, Woody, and just the teams he mentioned, that's a dreadful schedule.
Well, this is a big thing for the Chiefs. The Chiefs went from being, and we saw this being a lot of the Patriots' success over the years. They were the best team in that division. Everyone else was kind of trash. And we saw this with the Chiefs the past couple of years. The AFC West was the walk-through division. Now you have the Chargers who might win the division, the Raiders who might win the division, and Broncos with a great defense who not an easy dub.
Yeah.
It's just different. All right, moving on.
You're on something there, though. No, you're fine. Right? Go.
Washington football team, Green Bay Packers. CJ, you had faith. You had faith in the team. You thought they were going to hold your boy Rodgers.
They should have, too.
The Green Bay came up with 4 red zone stops here and no field goals out of those 4 red zone trips, which is insane. They had a goal line stop. They had a fumble in the 5-yard line. The Washington could have easily as won this game.
Right. This game was definitely competitive. I mean, the final score doesn't indicate as you mentioned, just a handful of plays that if, you know, they go the other way, it's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Antonio Gibson in this one, obviously playing with a fracture in his shin. 14 carries, 51 yards. Got stuffed near the goal line a little bit, but Taylor Heinicke, 10 carries, 95 yards.
Love that guy.
I mean, I love the grittiness of Taylor Heinicke, but he just can't make those throws downfield.
I see arm talent there. I do. Do I think he's? I mean, look, he was sleeping on his sister's couch, you know, a year and a half ago for a reason. So don't get me wrong, but the more I see this guy, he has good enough arm strength and a good enough arm to, hey, you give him some more reps. I mean, that guy's a warrior and he's super athletic and he gets outside the pocket. And, you know, again, just like we were talking about Patrick Mahomes, maybe you want to hone in some things or maybe you don't because he's young, right? So he's learning what he can and can't do. This is almost pretty much his rookie year, to be honest with you. I think they need to, you know, ride him out and see how he does and, you know, check in with him next year too.
Yeah.
Now, the Green Bay Packers could not get any run game going in this one. Aaron Jones, 6 carries, 19 yards. A.J. Dillon, 3 carries, 6 yards. Are we concerned about this? Or is this more of a game flow scenario there? They just didn't have it running the ball today?
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, the Washington football team outgained Green Bay in this game. They had more first downs. They were slightly less, you know, they had a few less third down conversions than what Green Bay did. I think when you hit on what Green Bay was able to do in the run game or unable to do, the difference maker is Aaron Rodgers, his 27 to 35 passing, 274, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions compared to the other side. I mean, Heinicke, look, I mean, the dude, he takes care of the football. He was 25, 37, 268 yards, a touchdown, only 1 interception, but the run, his ability to run the football is impressive too. I mean, that's
especially
just an
his
element
age
to add. Right. Yeah.
And his, hold on, wait, never mind.
He runs the ball smart too. He's not like most quarterbacks. Like, he's going down before he gets touched.
Well, you know, he's deceptive. You don't think he could run, and then you see him take off, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, the old man's got a little leg in him.
The Packers' run defense is a problem.
It is. It is. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. My biggest thing is Aaron Jones. This is, like I said, the $100 million man. He's a $100 million man now. Like, 6 carries, 19 yards. 5 receptions, 20 yards. I mean, obviously, Aaron Jones is going to get his. He's one of the most explosive backs around the red zone in the whole entire NFL. But, man, you're only giving 6 carries to a $100 million man?
Well, I mean, look at that front he's facing. And we all know the secondary for the Washington football team's not the best. They've gotten a little bit better. I think that's, you know, a business decision. Don't run your $100 million running back into a wall for no reason. But also, you don't want to give up on the run either. I mean, when you look at the amount of rush attempts that they had, it's not ideal. But you got Aaron Rodgers for a reason. Use him.
This is true. Obviously, we'll see in the next few weeks how that goes. Big game for the Packers here. If they could steal one against the Cardinals, especially without Davante Adams, that speaks miles for their team. It's a big statement win. Let's go to the Atlanta Falcons, Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins got a point in this one, but we saw Matt Ryan. He'd been playing really well past few weeks coming to this one. He did it again today. He had a very dumb fumble near the end of the game. Actually, almost lost the game here. He took off running, his old stiff self, and the defender just came up right behind him, punched the ball out. And luckily, he was able to make up for his mistake, though. He led the Falcons down the field and got that last field goal to win the game. The big story of this game, though, was rookie Kyle Pitts. His second 200-yard game in a row. His second 100-yard receiving game in a row. And he becomes the first rookie tight end to have 200-yard games in a row since it was a real old dude from the Ravens, I think.
Oh, damn. I was about to throw some guesses out there. But
It wasn't anyone big. But this really changes that Falcons offense. If Calvin Ridley can get it going, and you have Kyle Pitts stretching the field too.
That's Russell Gage. He had a game.
Yeah. Russell Gage had a deep TD as well. So the Atlanta Falcons, let's look at them for a second. They're sitting at 3-3. Do we see them in contention for maybe a wild card spot?
No, this offense can keep moving. This is a bad team. This is a bad team. I think they should be extremely happy that they're 3-3 at this juncture in the season. I mean, honestly, I'm not even trying to like bash on them like that. I don't think this Falcons team is a good team. I don't think this offense is necessarily a good offense. The defense is terrible. I mean,
yeah,
they beat the Dolphins.
I think their offense is okay. Their defense is whatever. Two bad teams playing each other here. One of them had to win.
Somebody.
And the Falcons got it done, and it could have went either way. I mean,
now we saw some life from Tua so far. This might be maybe his best game as a pro, second best game as a pro. 291
two
yards,
good games in a row,
four TDs. But he did throw two interceptions, and one of those cost them the game. That last interception was the reason why the Falcons were able to put this one away. The Falcons go home. Bye-bye, 1-6, obviously. But, like, it's just see what we got from Tua for the rest of the season, right? And then reevaluate.
Yeah.
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 I think for the Falcons, the division they're in, it's questionable, obviously, who's going to be second in that division. So we'll see how that plays out, too.
Okay. Cincinnati Bengals and Baltimore Ravens. Now, we were all over this one, see you and me. We thought this was going to be a tough, close division game. And we were wrong there, but we still got the pick right because the Cincinnati Bengals, they ain't the baby Bengals anymore. This is the angsty teenage Bengals. They're angry. Yeah. they're mad that they're
this is the definition of
they're whooping on them.
I tell you what, man. Jamar Chase made Marlon Humphrey.
Superstar.
Look like a little boy.
Jamar Chase
all day.
That's what you get for leaving him out there like that too. Yeah.
Like we gotta say that now. Jamar Chase is a superstar.
See, now I'm not ready to say that. Yeah. I'm not ready to give these cats their flowers yet, Woody. I mean, damn, is he one of the better receivers in the league already?
He's up there.
Sure.
Okay, all right.
But
all
I
right.
can't let's say talk super. About it. Julio Jones is a superstar.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. So wide receiver wise, you want Jamar Chase or Cooper Kupp?
Jamar Chase.
Yeah, I want Jamar Chase.
You want Jamar Chase or Tyreek Hill? Tyreek. You want Jamar Chase or Deebo Samuels?
Tyreek with Mahomes.
Jamar Chase, but none of the guys you're naming outside of maybe Cooper Kupp are superstars. So look, I love Jamar Chase. I don't agree. He's trending that way. I'm just not ready to say.
Do you want Jamar Chase or Stephon Diggs?
Give me Stephon Diggs.
Give me Jamar Chase.
Yeah, Jamar Chase is playing better through weeks. Just
how physical of a wide receiver he is. Like he can take on a number one.
Yeah, I mean the yards after catch, breaking tackles, that stuff that he showed this past game, so impressive. Special.
And Brandon, you said, well, that's what you get when you put Marlon Humphrey out there on the island. They weren't expecting that, though, because they put Humphrey out there on the island. He beats the receivers up out there.
And that was not the case.
No.
He was able to get off the line of scrimmage easy. He was able to get around him. He was moving. He did whatever he wanted.
Breaking tackles,
him on skates. Yeah.
And let's be real here. I think this was Joe Burrow's most impressive game as a pro. It wasn't even his best completion percentage-wise, not even close, 23 of 38. But he had 416 yards and 3 TDs. And CJ, as you pointed out in the game, and I saw as well, this was a different Joe Burrow in the pocket. He was making slight movements that we see from great pocket quarterbacks, avoiding that initial contact with the first pass rush defender and stepping into his throws. And he's obviously gained the confidence back with his knee, coming back from injury, stepping into those throws. If Joe Burrow starts emerging as like a top 10 quarterback here in the league, as this stretch comes down the field, guys, I know this is early and I know this is crazy, but are we talking possibly Bengals? Maybe the few things go right, contenders here?
It doesn't feel right to say yes.
It does.
That's a good answer.
I don't know. Honestly, right now, I mean, they're playoff contenders. Are they
tied for first in the Super Bowl division, and they own the tiebreaker now?
Man, I feel like they can get into the playoffs. They can win this division right now as it stands, but I don't see them as contenders yet. I do see Burrow as a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah.
He's climbing. He's climbing in there, man.
Let's look at the Ravens side of the football. Lamar Jackson, this one, we've seen him throw much better the past few weeks. This one, it was a little rough. He did not make good throws on target. He was overthrowing guys. Balls were sailing a little high. Didn't have a lot of time. But I was watching some film breakdown by some analysts on TikTok, and there were a lot of running holes that we saw for Lamar Jackson up the middle that he just wasn't taking that he normally would, that he took shots downfield instead.
You're right. Spot on.
I think it's more so sometimes during certain plays, I watch Lamar Jackson. I'm like, okay, he's working his progressions.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times I'm like, there's no way in hell he's working his progression because he just threw it that way. And I don't know why he threw it that way because this guy's right here. You know, so Lamar Jackson is special. There's no doubt about it. He's not a great passer. They beat up on the Chargers last week, and if you look at his numbers as a passer, I mean, he threw 2 picks, 1 touchdown. You know, he threw for under 200 yards passing, so he didn't have a great passing week last week. I mean, I think this is just who Lamar Jackson is. He's going to look like an inconsistent passer at times because he's going to have good weeks. He's going to have bad weeks, but the threat that he puts on a defense is what allows Baltimore the chance to win every single week.
Yeah, this is who he is, and without a strong running back in that backfield with him, it does hamper that offense. Yeah,
I don't think the Ravens are contenders. And people beat me up for saying that because you look at them before this week coming into it, 5-1. Look, the defense is hit or miss. We're used to seeing that defense be more hit, a lot more hit than a lot more miss. The defense has been hit or miss. And then the run game has struggled this year. So with all that said, you're telling me, people are trying to tell me that the Ravens are a complete team. And when they win, it's generally because Lamar Jackson, you got to be Superman. And
one thing that they can do to help him, CJ, make a trade for a running back before the trade deadline and go get a good one. Go get Saquon Barkley.
They're not going to trade Saquon Barkley.
You never know.
No, I don't.
Okay. If they want to hold on to him because he doesn't
Houston
seem to
have Houston got like 12 running backs. You can trade for Mark Ingram again. You know, you can...
maybe Marlon Mack. I mean, there's some names out there. Right. Yeah, there's some guys. Do it. You'll get
Marquise,
one.
Hollywood Brown looks better than he has his entire career thus far. 37 receptions, 566 yards. He had one. He's had some bad drops this year. The man's got 6 TDs through 7 games. Is Hollywood Brown going to finish as a top 10 fantasy wide receiver?
I mean, if they could connect on this last game was 5 catches out of 14 targets for 80 yards. If they could connect on a few more of those, we're talking Tyreek Hill. Rashad Bateman stepped up, though.
Yeah.
3 out of 6 for 80. So he had the same amount of yards as Brown. And we saw a couple nice plays, yards after catch and him moving with Lamar a little bit at when plays broke down. So a lot going on there.
All right. Detroit Lions, Los Angeles Rams. This one was closer than a lot of people thought it was going to be. CJ, good call on this one on the Giants spread. Knew we were going to get one of two of those on the Giants spread. Someone was going to mess up. Jared Goff. Not a great game, but looked better than he has the last few weeks. That's not saying much. The Rams came out slow in this one, but by the end of the game, they were moving. They got it done. They made some clutch plays to secure the win. And the Rams moved to 6-1 now. So not all the wins have been prettiest, but they're winning. They're winning these football games.
Yeah.
Is there any takeaways from this game specifically for the Rams that you see? Any worries, concerns?
I'm so upset that what you said there, I mean, they're winning games. But man, this was an opportunity to dominate an opponent. It was kind of one of those layup situations that a lot of people believed would come to fruition with the margin, you know, the spread being what it was heading into that game. You thought that it was a layup in that. Now, we all know it, the NFL is the NFL, but this is supposed to be the Rams. With Stafford, they're supposed to be dynamic, electric, blowing teams up, all that good stuff. They had an opportunity to do it. They didn't get it done. It was just too close for too long. I mean, the Lions were in it forever.
They had a chance. Jared Goff had a chance to lead them down the field to tie it up at the end of the game and ended up throwing a pick to Jalen Ramsey. Like, you thought he would knew better after all those years of practice. But, you know, I feel like this is just, look, the Rams are a really good team. But I think it shows us that even though they beat the Buccaneers earlier this season, like there's tiers, there's levels to all of this. All right, you look and not to get too far off subject, but the Buccaneers had a similar opponent this week, and they manhandled them. Whereas the Rams struggle with their, you know, similar opponent being the Detroit Lions.
To be fair, the Detroit Lions, though, have invested a lot into that offensive line.
That defense is awful. And the Rams just put up 26 points. Like, it's just, it's,
They're 6-1.
They did have the Rams' old quarterback. So I guarantee Jared Goff was grilled by the defensive coordinator on tendencies and what they like to do, where the soft spots are. That's not something to underestimate. They had the Rams starting quarterback from the last 4 years, so they did know the hot spots of this offense.
Yeah.
Like, also, this one, I got a question for y'all. DeAndre Swift. Is DeAndre Swift going to finish as a fantasy top 5 back? He's not getting a ton of yards on the ground, but he's catching receiving yards.
He is. If you start to measure it from the point where he's starting to pick up ground, and that's something to look at, Woody, too, in terms of fantasy information, trends, and things of that nature, is to kind of look at the last 2 or 3 weeks of a player's trend. That's something to look at. I think that, yeah, he could be up there with the amount of usage he's getting as a result. 10 targets, caught 8 of them, 96 yards. He had that long 63-yard touchdown. Yeah, impressive game for him. It kind of slowed down a bit, though. For him throughout, Rams kind of slowed him down. He started out strong and didn't really kind of finish the way that it looked like he could. But
Philadelphia Eagles at Las Vegas Raiders, the Raiders 33, Eagles 22. This one wasn't as close as the score. The Raiders took a commanding lead in the beginning, and they just kind of held on to it. Eagles made that late game push, getting some garbage time touchdowns that we've seen them do the last few weeks. So they're putting up numbers, but this Eagles team is toast. They're done. We've been all over that. They're not a good team. We didn't think they were a good team when it started. But the most impressive stat of this game was Derek Carr was 31 of 34.
Yeah.
Like, the efficiency. Yeah.
There was I mean, he's just, let's just put it this way. Like, the Raiders have looked a lot different the past couple weeks. John Gruden's not there, and they're playing better. Like, they're running the ball more efficiently. They're throwing the ball more efficiently. It's like the play calling has changed, you know, and these guys are just operating a lot better. I mean, Kenyon Drake is a great example of a guy who was just non-existent for the most part.
I knew it was coming with Kenyon Drake.
Right. Well, I mean, the change in coaching staff happens, and then boom, he has his first big game. And he's been consistent. He's not getting a ton of, you know, he didn't get a ton of playing time the last week when he put up the numbers. So it's kind of like, okay, is he going to continue to get usage? We saw more usage this week with Jacobs going down to a minor chest injury, which they say isn't serious. So again, I think that this offense is doing what we thought it would be able to do with that backfield combination. Derek Carr is a passer, and now they're just on a roll. And now they look like the favorites, right? In the AFC West, ultimately. I mean, we went from Kansas City, the Chargers. I think we kind of went back and forth with the Raiders and Chargers, and now it's the Raiders. So,
and you know, they may not be the most talented wide receiver team in the league, but I mean, when you look at the complementary of their top three wide receivers, Hunter Renfro, he's that guy that can move the chains. He's going to find the hole in the defense. Bryan Edwards is that big physical wide receiver on the outside that you can go to when you need a big play. And then Henry Ruggs is the home run hitter. That's a nice one through three there when it comes to actual skill set. So I think this Raiders team is for real, and they're first in their division right now. And I think it's going to be the Raiders and Chargers coming down the stretch for that division title.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. And again, it's really impressive to see what they've been able to do the last couple of weeks. And I feel like the momentum that they have is really, really positive right now. So
any thoughts on the Eagles before we move on? I mean, I think they are who they are. We're not really sure if Jalen Hurts is an actual starter, and Devontae Smith looked good.
If you're looking fantasy wise, Woody. Yeah. Hurts is a starter.
Yeah, exactly.
Outside of that, you know, a lot of his usage or his numbers in terms of fantasy stats have happened actually in the fourth quarter. So he's got a lot more going for him late in games because they're playing from behind, or he's trying to do more late in games. So he's somebody to keep in fantasy. He's going to start the rest of this year. They're not really, I don't see them making any kind of change there. There's nothing they can really do at this point other than just keep moving.
Now, fantasy as well, there is an opportunity here. I'm actually bummed I traded him away, but I got Hunter Henry. Kenneth Gainwell, Miles Sanders will be most likely missing this next game. So this will be Kenneth Gainwell's opportunity to be the number one back in this backfield that we've seen from the rookie so far, first time. So that's someone to keep an eye on this week.
Yeah.
And especially with buys, he's a lot out there on a lot of waiver wires. Yeah, so go out there and look for Kenneth Gainwell. Houston Texans, Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals won this one 31-5. It started off slow. The Cardinals offense sputtered a little bit in the first and second quarter, but then they finished strong. They just kept moving down the field, making some big plays. We saw another huge play by A.J. Green, 3 receptions, 66 yards, but a 41-yarder that really got this offense going and moving down the field into the red zone. That's turning out to be a great pickup. And then we saw, for the first time this year, the Arizona got it done through on running. Chase Edmonds, 15 carries, 81 yards. James Conner, 10 carries, 64 yards and a touchdown. I believe he has a 13 red zone or inside the 5-yard line carries now, most in the league for a running back. So that's
Connor.
Someone.
Connor is in there almost every red zone attempt.
Exactly. Well, those are players that you may want to target. That people aren't sure on in coming down the stretch for fantasy, because if he's getting those TD options, that's an amazing flex option.
Yep. To throw out there. It's a big deal.
So that's someone that you may be able to throw in on a trade to get it done, and you could give up a better player and get similar production. So
AJ Green too. AJ Green's a receiver from that aspect of things too, to keep an eye on, because he's been getting some consistent usage out there as well. I mean,
totally.
Yeah.
Zach Ertz. Yeah. This could be a big addition to their offense. Even though he's may have lost a step over the years, we saw them ran a reverse near the goal lines. Ertz actually put the ball on the ground, but he had a huge reception that went for a touchdown, 47 yards, that he put the burners on a little bit. Does Zach Ertz make this offense even another level better?
Absolutely he does. I didn't expect him to, you know, hop out there and put up a stat line like he did.
In the first game. Like
yeah, in his first game. Right. I figured, you know, fade him for a week, because I have him in a couple fantasy leagues, by the way, and fade him for a week, throw him out there, and I faded him. And he ended up, I believe, in one of our leagues, the tight end or that flex spot, super flex spot. He scored 17 and I didn't have him in. So, yeah. But again, that's a guy to go get. If he's on waivers, he shouldn't be. That means your league is pretty stupid and they're not paying attention. Therefore, go get him. And if you have him, you're lucky, because he's going to be a legit tight end, you know, one. As they would say, for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Chicago Bears 3, Tampa Bay Buccaneers 38. This was an absolute stomping. It wasn't even watchable unless you're just looking for highlights from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady was unbelievable in this one. 20 of 36, only 211 yards, but the four touchdowns and Mike Evans. You know, this is what you're going to get with Mike Evans now. Tom Brady is quarterback. He's not going to be there some weeks, but other weeks he's going to have three touchdowns. That's just how it is. It helped that Antonio Brown missed this one, but maybe Tom Brady and Mike Evans get back on the same page. You see him looking for him more often down the stretch.
Yeah. Hey, look, the narrative all week heading into this game and whatever motivation that it provides a team, it could be very minuscule. It could be great. This was Brady's first time in his career facing a former Ohio State quarterback as a starter, by the way. And it was Justin Fields of all quarterbacks. And going into this game, my mindset going into it is, okay, they're going to cover this thing because the team is going to go out there and they're just going to put it on this guy just for that reason. And they did just that. I mean, Fields,
not to
jump. Yeah, I mean, 22 of 32, 184 yards, three interceptions, a 44.3 QBR. He just couldn't get anything going. They were after him all day. They were two for 11 on third down. You know, it is what it is. Now, the one impressive thing for the Bears has been Khalil Herbert. I mean, this is the top or one of the top rush defenses in the NFL, right? They're usually one or two, it feels like, every single year. And here you are, you got Khalil Herbert rushing for 100 yards again. So when you want to talk about fantasy, whether it's dynasty or whatever, go get that guy. If he's sitting out there, go get that guy. And not to turn this into a fantasy show, that's a really relevant thing here. Khalil Herbert is
no, it
real.
Is. And especially for people like me, who I had David Montgomery and I expected him to come back and be that number one back. But I missed out on picking up Damian Williams and Khalil Herbert on the waiver wire. And Khalil Herbert has been so good. I see a split backfield when David Montgomery comes back, especially coming back from that type of leg injury.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's still Montgomery's backfield, but Herbert's going to get some run. He's not going to get the same kind of usage, but what this does for you is it allows Montgomery to kind of take a step back and continue to heal. You don't have to rush him out there. And plus, your season at this point, I mean, you're 3-4. Let's not say it's over. It's definitely, you're not done for, right? You don't want to rush Montgomery back. I don't think he's going to make that big of a difference in the grand scheme of things. So,
Allen Robinson. We cutting him?
I think so. I just, you can't trust this pass game to really turn into anything this year. Look,
Fields, I think it goes one of two ways. If you're in a fantasy situation where you're like 2-4, or 2-5, you're sitting behind the gun, you need points now, he's cuttable. But if you're in a situation where he just hasn't performed for you thus far, you're starting people in your flex off the waiver wire right now, I'd still hold on to him, because if Justin Fields starts figuring out towards the end of the year, this is still a top 10 fantasy wide receiver talent wise.
Yeah. I don't trust him right now. I don't trust this.
You're not putting him
whatsoever
in the starting lineup. That's for sure.
Yeah. There's better options. Hell, there's better options on waivers every week.
Nope, totally. Then we're at the Sunday night football game, Indianapolis Colts, San Francisco 49ers. I was all over this one. I thought the Colts were coming, looked great the week before. Carson Wentz is starting to look healthy and make some throws downfield. He didn't make the bet. He didn't have the best game yardage wise or completion percentage, but he got it done. He made some big throws to Michael Pittman and a very long touchdown pass. And he actually ran one in here. If the Colts can get consistent quarterback play from Carson Wentz and then Jonathan Taylor, who's been on a 3-game tear at another 100-yard rushing here, I mean, this is the Colts season next week. If they can steal this win from the Tennessee Titans, they'll own the tiebreaker and they will be only a game behind the Titans in the standings. So this is a huge game for the Indianapolis Colts season coming up next week. And honestly, they match up well against what the Titans are best at, which is stopping the run. They have, they're tough in the middle. They got Darius Leonard. Does that mean they can stop Derrick Henry? Probably not. But can they contain him to maybe one long run? That'll make a big difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference. But here's the thing, too. You got Jonathan Taylor on the other side. He's emerged as a big time, you know, running back in the league right now. Okay. He's definitely, if he remains upright for the Colts, he gives them a shot every single week. It helps Carson Wentz, the play action, it sets all that stuff up. They're just, you know, the Colts, they don't look pretty. They're not going to win pretty. They're not going to do anything amazing, but they do. Wentz is adequate. When we want to talk about Carson Wentz and the argument about whether he's the guy or not, he is the guy, right? He is the Colts Jimmy G right now. He's going to be the bridge to whoever's next, right? And this is the NFL. And when we look at the NFL from a quarterback standpoint, how many teams have a guy, right? How many teams are missing their guy, right? Yep. We know the Texans are awful. Any team with a rookie quarterback right now, for the most part, has struggled, unless you're the Patriots, who have done okay with their rookie quarterback so far. Even Jacksonville is somewhat adequate, doesn't look terrible. So, but you just need the veteran quarterback in Carson Wentz, no matter how fragile he is mentally or physically, he's getting it done. And you said it, you know,
and he's looking better each week too. Yeah. That's important because you will see improvement as the season goes on.
Just don't ask him to win a game for you. That's the key. And teams are going to force their hand at some point. You know, good run defenses are going to force Taylor. You know, they're going to force this run game. They're going to stop it. And then it's going to force Carson Wentz to have to do more. And that's where you'll probably stumble.
And a healthy T.Y. Hilton, is a nice return next week. He had 4 catches for 80 yards his first week back. Had a little leg problem, but he'll be back in the lineup next week. So that could make this offense a little bit more consistent. And with the emergence of Michael Pittman being able to make plays downfield too, that's another big play wide receiver you add to this stable. So that they're trending up right now.
Yeah, San Francisco 1 of 11 on third down, by the way. That is, that's rough.
Debo Samuel, another great game. 7 receptions, 100 yards, and a touchdown. He's having an absolute monster season fantasy-wise. But Brandon Ayuk, cuttable.
Yes.
After all that potential that we saw his rookie year, it just looked like a possible top 15 wide receiver coming into the year.
He's still somewhere in the 80% snap share range, so he's on the field. He's just not getting open. I'll tell you this. I know that this offense likes to, you know, kind of scheme things up for certain guys, and Samuel is the guy. If Samuel, God forbid, he gets injured or goes down for any period of time at all, God willing, and the creek don't rise that he doesn't, because he's having a phenomenal year and you want to continue to see him be successful. I root for guys like that, right? That have come off injury and now they're looking amazing and what they should be, right? As a player, if Samuel goes down, Ayuk is the next man up in that role. So you got to think about it from that standpoint and the history and what's happened with Debo in the past. So
an ugly Monday night game, New Orleans Saints 13, Seattle Seahawks 10. We all went New Orleans here, especially with Geno Smith starting, and it seemed like a smart pick, but that extra 0.5 point, it swung that one. This was a field goal game, and it was 13 to 10. Jameis Winston, he had moments where he looked good last night. He had moments where he looked terrible. But one positive I saw in this game, one positive I saw for sure in this game, was they started throwing the ball to Alvin Kamara more. Started screening, scheming him open with screens. If they can get Alvin Kamara back involved in this pass game and Michael Thomas comes back next week, there's some bright spots for the Saints. They're 4-2. They've weathered the storm a little bit here.
Traquan Smith was back. You know, he didn't really do anything, but it, you know, give him another week, you know, give him another week to work together. And Winston, he already had a rapport. They talked about it last night. He's some Traquan Smith and him worked a ton in the offseason. So that's something to keep note on because, you know, he'll be looking for that guy probably more often than not, even potentially with, you know, once the return of, and his name is escaping me, save my life, Woody. Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas.
For the love of God. All right. Man. So even with the return of Michael Thomas, you have to keep an eye on Traquan Smith and his usage in that relationship between he and Winston. But yeah, the ugliest game of the night. I think the most entertaining aspect of the night was the Manning cast, Marshawn Lynch dropping S bombs and F bombs and all that on national television. And then Manning having to come on and apologize on national television for that after they had back and forth. I mean, the man was taking Hennessy shots on live on air, I think, before I even put it on. They were talking about it.
They got what they wanted. They wanted Marshawn Lynch, and they got all of them.
Raw and uncut. And, you know, something that should have been on pay-per-view, I think. But I think that he knew it, too. And the funniest thing was when he asked, when he brought up the Papa John's deal for Peyton Manning, he's like, how do I get in on something like that? It's just, it felt like a troll move. Cause Manning didn't even say a word after that. He just kind of smirked. Like they just kind of moved on to what was going on in the game. So a couple times
when Marshawn had Skittles for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Taste the rainbow, but I'll be honest. This game, ugly. The Seahawks absolutely need Russell Wilson to come back in a hurry because this offense is not clicking. They had the one big play to Metcalf where you're like, wow, you know, that was nice. And Geno Smith made a hell of a throw. He threw him open and he ran under it and everything worked, right? You didn't see much of that after that. And you're not going to be able to win games like this. You're going to bring Russell Wilson back and you're going to be what? 2-6. Are they on bye? I have no idea. I'm not even looking at their schedule, but hopefully they're on bye soon.
No, they're on bye week 9.
Okay. So you've got
Russ is eyeing coming back week 10.
Yeah, there you go. You could be 2-6 when he comes back. And that's real. And then you have to think, like, is it even worth it for Russ to be there? Because once he's there,
Russ is a tough guy and he doesn't like missing time.
He'll do his thing and hopefully, you know, they can right that ship. And as for the Saints, they're doing enough. You know, we just talked about who's going to be the next team in that division, in their division. Is it going to be Atlanta? We don't foresee that being a thing. I think it is going to be the Saints. We're going to get a matchup between New Orleans and Tampa Bay this coming weekend, and we're going to settle some things in that regard.
Totally. Right now, fantasy-wise, the only must-start on this team for the Seattle Seahawks is DK Metcalf until Russell Wilson comes back, right? Tyler Lockett has just shown he has no connection to Geno Smith.
Right. It's just a different connection between he and Russ. I mean, Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett are known for having, like, the highest QBR, you know, between one another out of any QB wide receiver.
Tyler Lockett has become Russ's Doug Baldwin. He stepped into that role. They have that connection. Undersized receiver has speed, can get down the field, but Russ can find those holes in the zone to put him in a place to make play runs after the catch.
There you go. 100%.
Alex Collins, also someone to look at in the flex spot. Did not have a good game last night, but he had a good game the week before. But other than that, there's nothing here on the Seahawks that you're looking at.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon. Well, that is our final game, and that's going to wrap up our NFL Tuesday review of the weekend tongue tied there. As always, guys, look out for our Thursday night football preview. We put that out midday, give you a little teaser for the Thursday night football game. Perfect little listen on the ride home. It's about 15 minutes long. Check that out. And then as always, we're putting out our gambling picks on Fridays for that weekend, and we've been doing pretty good. We're in the positive. Everyone here is in the positive. So that's the best you can ask for.
You had 8 wins this past week, so you took the lead, not the lead overall, but you took the lead in week 7. So Woody won the week.
Shout out to the Browns.
CJ was second with 7, and I came in third with 6. So my overall win percentage so far is 51%. I'm in third. Woody is second at 56%, and CJ is in the lead, picking at a incredible 63% professional gambler level. I can't even believe it. It's amazing. So just follow whatever formula he has right now and ride the hot hand.
I'll be up there. CJ has had the hot hand, and I'm catching up. I had a fire year last year, had a bad week a couple weeks ago, but we're back. I'm in contention, so we'll do all right. As always, check out Brandon's site, Football Scout 365. He's done a lot of draft. He's starting to do a lot of draft coverage for next year. And honestly, like, Brandon was the reason I've been so on top of the rookies this year. And there was a lot of dudes. If you're not paying very close attention to college football, he's going to bring to light the guys that aren't on those major teams that you wouldn't know about going into the draft, and you'll have a nice leg up on in dynasty drafts and stuff like that. Perfect example. He brought up Khalil Herbert. I was all over Kadarius Toney because of Brandon telling me about the wide receiver, not just Kyle Pitts on the Florida team. He's been all over Rashard Bateman, who's starting to look good. Rondale Moore is a difference maker. We've seen in Arizona immediately. Dude knows what he's talking about. And always check us out at Football Scout, the number 5 Tool Sports Podcast.com and on Instagram, the number 5 Tool Sports Podcast.
That was a tease.
I think we're good here. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and let's let the music play. We out.
I couldn't stop if I wanted to. A 9-to-5 is something that I don't want to do. Sit in the cubicle.